Joining us now is my good friend Nick Gillespie. He joins us from the Fox News D.C. Bureau. Nick is the editor-in-chief of Reason TV and Reason.com. Nick, always a pleasure. Welcome back to Freedom Watch.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
We're chatting with John Dennis, who has announced the formation of an exploratory committee to seek the Republican nomination for the United States Congress to oppose Mrs. Nancy Pelosi in San Francisco, and with Bob Schultz, whom I think you know, who is the chair of We the People Foundation for Constitutional Education. And, of course, we welcome you to join this conversation. We're happy you can do so. Here's the question that I just put to John a few minutes ago. Now that the president is a Democrat and is waging a war, where are all the anti-war protesters? What became of those folks who hated the war when Bush was running it?
Yeah, I think they're busy turning in fishy emails to the White House Communications Office or something like that. You know, this is not the first time we've seen this. And, of course, in the 90s, we saw a lot of anti-war Republicans who spent a lot of time attacking Bill Clinton's generally promiscuous and unwarranted interventions in various parts of the world. Suddenly, when a Republican became president, people like Madeleine Albright and various Democrats who had been pushing for intervention in the Balkans and Haiti elsewhere suddenly became dovish, and the Republicans, of course, became warmongers. And, you know, this is, to my mind, it is totally predictable, and it's also one of the most dispiriting aspects of American political life, which is if you're a libertarian, if you're a small-L libertarian, and you're actually interested in ideas and principles, You end up having to talk with people who really are just partisan hacks for the most part. And it's, you know, it's a red team, blue team thing. And the reason we don't see anti-war protesters is because they were Democrats first and anti-war protesters or anti-intervention people second.
Very interesting. Nick Gillespie, shortly before you joined us, we were talking about the states nullifying acts of the federal government, and our mutual friend Tom Woods was discussing Massachusetts nullifying slavery and the Fugitive Slave Act in the years before the Civil War.
Right.
Were you surprised when Eric Holder, notwithstanding this apparent raid that John just told us about on the West Coast, of which I didn't know, but when Eric Holder, the Attorney General of the United States, indicated that the federal government will not enforce the marijuana laws against growers and users of marijuana for medical purposes in those states that have purported to nullify that portion of the federal anti-marijuana laws so as to permit its use for medicinal purposes?
I was very heartened by that because this is something that people in the libertarian community and actually, to be honest, in the human community have been pushing for. It's clear, you know, most people, you can get into questions about slavery and American history and states' rights and all of this. Most people understand federalism, which would allow the states to be laboratories of experimentation, is a good thing, and it was good to see Holder, you know, communicating that and following up on a couple of Obama campaign promises. Now, what is more troubling to me is, as was mentioned, there have been raids after that in California. And more recently, only a few weeks ago, Gil Kerlikowske, the drug czar, gave a speech in Fresno where he was saying, you know what, legalization is not in the president's vocabulary, and that marijuana has no medical value, and that it shouldn't be used as medicine. So we're getting a mixed message out of this. When you factor in the idea that Obama, in his first big web-only town hall where he was showing us how groovy he was and he gets the inner tubes and all that kind of stuff, the top question, like people were supposed to be able to ask whatever question they wanted, the top question was about drug legalization, and he laughed it off with a joke. And I think, unfortunately, he did not answer it, and I think Obama is fundamentally not a serious policy person. He is charismatic. He's obviously the leader of the country, and he's got some ideas. But this is actually not a guy who is growing into this office, which is pretty horrifying when you consider things like the budget deficits that he himself has been jacking up, wars in Afghanistan, healthcare reform. I don't get a lot of confidence, and I think that my lack of confidence is reflected in national polls. I mean, his popularity is rating. He's an affable guy. He's a nice guy. People do not like his specific policies, and they're liking him less and less.
Did you, like some libertarians, have some cause for hope when he was elected that certain areas of human behavior, like fighting morally unjust foreign wars or enforcing morally unjust laws about what people put into their bodies in the privacies of their homes, might actually move into the liberty side of the spectrum. Did you expect some of that?
No, there was probably a portion of hardcore self-identified small L libertarians, you know, maybe even a majority who were like, Obama actually gives me hope. I was never, I've never been really confident that he was going to be different or that he was going to be anything other than a tool used by existing Democratic special interest groups or people like Pelosi and Harry Reid. And in fact, he was, I think he stole some of Ron Paul's anti-war rhetoric and anti-war sensibilities, which is the real reason why Ron Paul was so popular, because, you know, Iraq and Afghanistan are tremendously unpopular actions. And I think Obama coasted on some of that, but he's always been hawkish, and he surrounded himself with a very hawkish foreign policy team. And, you know, strangely, he keeps talking, or he's still talking, you know, 8 months in, he's still talking about how, oh, he inherited this situation or that situation. The one thing he's trying to do very clearly with Afghanistan is make it his own. And that's not a good thing when you see him doubling down or tripling down troops there. So I don't think so. And on marijuana, he seemed good. He's been wishy-washy on that. On various kinds of gay issues or kind of lifestyle issues, he's been out to lunch, too. So
I suspect that Eric Holder has spoken out of turn, that whatever comments he made were without the president's pre-approval, and that's why we've seen some very harsh language and some minimal yet significant efforts to enforce the federal laws against marijuana, notwithstanding what the attorney general said. She's afraid of dissent, and she would dare to call it unpatriotic. Mick, before I let you go,
Which, by the way, is the complete inverse of what people in the Bush administration were saying. To question the war, to question the maximum leader is anti-patriotic. And this is why I think that the past 8 months or the past year has been a great teachable moment to the American people, where they understand these parties are about power, they're not about principle. And Americans, I mean, this is why tea parties are big. This is why all sorts of town halls, all sorts of dissent is bubbling up, because people may not know exactly what they want, but they know they are tired of the status quo. And we're 10 years now into the 21st century.
Right.
It's a continuity between Bush and Obama. That's what people are angry about, and they're looking for change.
All right, so my last question to you is there a comfortable place in the Republican Party for libertarians, or is Ron Paul and a couple of the folks with him in the House, are they just the exception rather than the rule? Does it make sense for Republicans to seek power through, does it make sense for libertarians to seek power through the Republican Party?
I think it makes sense for libertarians to work with political parties to increase better, federal laws and policies. Well, you never put your faith in particular leaders. I do think that there are people like Ron Paul, like Jeff Flake. There's a couple of governors who are pretty good on, you know, or at least relatively speaking. Yeah, you can work with them. And then, you know, you work with Democrats on certain issues where they're good. Barney Frank is god-awful, 99% of the time. He's also pretty good on things like online gambling and gambling in general, which isn't the highest order issue. But it's, you know, there are people in Congress that we can work with to make this world a little bit freer and a little bit less stultified by government force. And I think libertarians should always recognize that politics is a lagging indicator of American society. It's the least important part of being alive, but you have to pay attention to it. And there are people in office that we can use to have better laws, like medical marijuana. It's not as good as full legalization, but for cancer patients and for pain patients and AIDS-wasting patients, it's much, much better than it was before that passed.
I'm going to use that phrase later on this week, even this afternoon. Politics is the least important part of being alive, but you have to pay attention to it. Only you could say that so wonderfully. Nick Gillespie, my good friend and the editor-in-chief of Reason TV and Reason.com, thanks for joining us.